You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making this part of your daily routine. Happy Thursday. Your week is almost over, and we, the Rain and Jays, are going to carry you through the final couple of days. I am...
Get on my back.
That's Jay King of The Athletic. I am John Corrales of MassLive.com. If you're a new listener... Welcome. Follow us. He's at by Jay King on Twitter. I'm at Reds Army underscore John on Twitter. That's kind of where we live. We don't do anything other social media, really. Occasional Instagram, but Twitter is our life. And if you need to subscribe to the podcast, download the new Himalaya podcast app. It curates your feeds based on your interests. So check that out. And you could always ask your smart device in your car to play podcast Locked On Celtics. Okay, today, much more on the draft lottery. We've had a night to sleep on it. We're going to talk about the tanking aspect and how much this fixes, quote-unquote, tanking. Some idiots are out there talking about Zion and what he should do again. But let's start, Jay, with how this impacts the Celtics and really try to drill down how much this hurts Boston. The Pelicans obviously got the number one pick. They've got Zion. So gone are the thoughts of, well, if so-and-so gets Zion, they're going to keep him. And if the Knicks get Zion, will they trade him? And how does it impact the Celtics' trade possibilities? Now New Orleans already has him. So now they can use Anthony Davis to build around him. How much do you think does that hurt Boston's chances of trading for Anthony Davis?
The interesting thing is David Griffin has been saying from day one, when he got the job, the Pelicans GM job, that he wants to keep Anthony Davis in New Orleans. And I don't know how realistic that desire is. There have been reports that Davis's stance hasn't changed, regardless of what happened in the lottery. He still wants out. The one thing to me, Zion may be so good, even as an 18-year-old, that Anthony Davis could play with him and pick up and be like, oh, okay.
Right.
Like I think Zion's that level of prospect where he is going to take the world by storm. I think he's a just superstar prospect. And maybe he's too young anyway to get Anthony Davis to want to stay. And maybe Anthony Davis still wants to go. But I wonder, plus that number one pick, if they want to go the other way, I don't think they will because Zion, like I said, is that big a prospect based on everybody you talk to thinks Zion is just an otherworldly prospect. But if they go the other way, almost anyone is available via trade with Zion. Like players that you don't even think are available. Like Zion, the Pelicans right now have the two best trade chips in the league with the number one pick and Anthony Davis, which is crazy. And so I think a lot of this now depends on what David Griffin can accomplish in his chats with Anthony Davis, whether he can convince him, I can build a team around you. And obviously having the number one pick, whatever it yields, whether it's Zion or whether they do trade it, the long shot that they do trade it for somebody incredible, like they have more, far more avenues now to create a great team at some point than they did before. And I don't know how much of that will keep Anthony Davis in town. He might still want to leave. Anyway, he only has 1 year left on his deal. So there is a time crunch for David Griffin to make his decision on Davis quickly. So that's the first level of it. The second level of it is the other teams that jumped up into the top four all had implications on the Celtics. The Grizzlies, which is a good thing for the Celtics because that meant that that pick will not convey this year. It probably means that the Grizzlies are going to have to trade Mike Conley and be promising but trash in the near future. And then the Knicks, who got number three, and the Lakers, who got number four. And the Lakers is the one that I think is potentially dangerous for the Celtics because they already have Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Kyle Kuzma, three pretty good, at least young players, and now they have the number four overall pick. And that's a package. And obviously there are health issues with both Ball and Ingram, but that's a real package for a superstar player. And so the Celtics were hoping to see all the possible Anthony Davis suitors not beef up and the Lakers beefed up a little bit. And it wasn't the number one pick. It wasn't the number two pick. This draft isn't considered deep. So the value of the number four pick may be lower than what it would be in a normal draft, but that's just another goodie for them to add on top of what they already have.
Yeah, this is, well, first of all, a lot to unpack there. I don't think New Orleans, the one thing I don't think they're going to do is say to Anthony Davis, stick around, we'll move the number one pick and get all of these pieces to put around you, and now you'll see a winner right away in New Orleans. I don't think that's the way to go at all. I think for New Orleans, their best bet at this point is just to move on because they'll sell more tickets with Zion and building a young team around him, and they'll build more equity with the fans for the future by putting a team around Zion and saying, here's your running gun, young team that you could really get behind and be invested in and really look forward to without having Anthony Davis come back, without signing an extension and saying, all right, let's try this again and see what happens, see if you like it. I think that would be the absolute wrong move. So now how do you build a team around Zion?
But the extension is going to be on the table.
Sure, but
what if he signs it?
Well, I mean, if he signs the extension, I guess, but I just don't like that plan. You've got this transcendent talent. You've got the established transcendent talent in Anthony Davis, but that hasn't worked there. You've got, who do you move it for? Are you moving Zion for a star player? I don't know. That seems like a sketchy path for them. It feels like a mistake for them. Like everybody's already at this place where you're moving on, just move on, use Davis to bring in the young guys and start fresh. And I don't see running it back with those guys, with whomever you get for Zion. I just think that's a mistake.
Okay. What's the Anthony Davis right now? How old is he? 26,
20. Yeah. Something like that.
So like 2 years from now, assuming Zion grows like everyone thinks he's going to grow, he's going to be an absolute force. Anthony Davis and Zion 2 years from now could be the best front court in the entire NBA.
Oh, if you keep them together, yeah. If you want to go Anthony Davis and Zion, I think you're talking about trading Zion away.
I have no idea what's possible because I don't know exactly what Anthony Davis is thinking. But I just think now they have a lot of avenues available to them, and they have just ammunition when they go to Anthony Davis to say there are ways we can become great in the near future. And with Zion and Anthony Davis, like, wow. And then Drew Holiday's still there, and then they can beef up their roster elsewhere. Like, all of a sudden, that you got to win the makings of a real winner in New Orleans, one way or another, whether you trade Anthony Davis or not. But yeah, I'm just really intrigued by what happens in New Orleans now. David Griffin, I mean, how lucky is that guy?
I mean, seriously.
See, the luckiest, he's won the lottery like 19 times.
I know, right? It's insane. I think
he took that job. Now that's like the best job in the league because you can just mold
You can
just mold a team however way you want it.
Yep.
he has every option right now, which
yep.
It's got to be fun as a GM.
It's really.
It's like 2K.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. He does have all of these options, and trading Zion is an option. I think it's the worst of the options at this
point. Agreed.
So, why don't we take a break, and we're going to come back to continue this conversation about where the C's stand in this whole landscape now of trading for Anthony Davis. Be right back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. As we said before the break, David Griffin has the world in his hands, and he has this opportunity in front of him. I think there are three really good suitors to give the Pelicans players that you can use to build around Zion, who I am looking at as it's positionless, but more of a four, not really a three necessarily. But however, at this point, everybody just kind of mixes in together. So the three thoughts that I have. First, the Knicks. The Knicks have the third overall pick, so you can add R.J. Barrett if you want, or somebody else, but you have one of the top three guys, so you can add him. Or you can get – well, I'm sorry. In addition to that, you can get
your boy,
Kevin Knox.
Your boy, you get, Kevin Knox.
Yep, that's my guy. You can get Mitchell Robinson. And you can get
we just have to explain the backstory on that for those who don't know. When we were previewing the season, John said Kevin Knox. He was on your list of top players to watch this season.
Yeah, I was excited to watch to see what he did, and that turned into a big thing. Like I was some kind of idiot for being excited about Kevin Knox.
Did it look great? In retrospect?
No, it didn't look particularly great.
So you were an idiot.
No, I didn't say he was going to be great. I said, I'm excited to see what he can do. And I saw what he could do. But, and that still, he had a rookie year that was, he really didn't shoot it well, but he still showed some potential there. So their offer would be centered around Knox, Mitchell Robinson, Dennis Smith Jr., the third overall pick, and then whatever to match the salaries. That, I think, gives them the point guard, and Dennis Smith, still kind of not exactly great, but Mitchell Robinson, I think, is the jewel in that because he can be your defensive shot blocker, finisher that can start fast breaks. Dennis Smith and Kevin Knox can go out there and be part of a run-and-gun team, and then the third overall pick can be an instant impact player. That, I think, is a very good package. The Lakers, with Ingram, Ball, Kuzma, and the fourth pick, you now, again, you have a pass-first point guard in Ball, which you actually kind of want in this situation because Ingram and Kuzma and Zion are all going to need the ball, and you need somebody to get them the ball. So in that scenario, having Ball is actually probably a good thing because with his passing ability, and you could use the fourth pick. Maybe it's a bit of a reach, but you could reach a bit and get somebody like Jackson Hayes, who is the top projected shot blocking rim running big in the draft. And that's the type of player that would fit there. You would also be able to move Drew Holiday in those scenarios and stock up for future drafts. The Celtics scenario would probably include Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, those three guys, and Robert Williams match Anthony Davis dollar for dollar. Now, I know people probably just shit themselves after hearing all of those names, but with the competition as tough as it is with the Lakers and the Knicks vying for Anthony Davis, you're going to have to give up more than you think.
I don't think the Knicks package is that good.
I think the third pick makes it
better. I could be wrong, but I think a lot of people see this as a two-person draft. Or really a one-person draft with a different tier, Ja Morant, than the rest. Now, I'm sure there are some people out there who really value R.J. Barrett or whoever they have third on their list. But I think there was a fall-off from 2 to 3. I don't value Knox particularly highly. I don't value Dennis Smith Jr. highly at all. So that to me is a lesser package than the Lakers and this, like, that to me is on a different tier. And maybe not. Like, obviously it's in the eye of David Griffin, who is the one who's going to decide, but that to me just isn't in the same stratosphere as what the Lakers and Celtics can. I mean, not the same stratosphere. That's probably overstating things, but it's just not the same level. But yeah, I do think because of the lottery, if the Celtics would have to cough up a little more than they want, especially like Kyrie's future is uncertain. At least it certainly seems like it's uncertain. And the timing of the trade, you'd have to agree to a trade probably on draft night, June 20th, a week and a half before Kyrie hits free agency. And so there's going to be a lot of information gathering the Celtics are going to have to do before draft night. And then they can't officially trade for Davis on draft night because they still have Kyrie technically on their roster for now. So there's just a lot of moving parts this summer for the Celtics. Danny Ainge and his front office are going to be so busy with so much information gathering and so many like different moving parts and variables that I don't envy those guys this summer.
But let me ask you this.
Although I kind of do because they're running an NBA team.
Yeah. Sure. Let me ask you this. Do you agree with the premise that the Celtics will have to pay a lot here, and it would have to include all three of those guys, Smart, Brown?
I don't know all three of those guys. I think the Lakers, the health issues for Ingram and Lonzo Ball are at least somewhat troubling. I mean, obviously I don't have the health, but blood clots are a big deal.
It's scary. That is like, very, very scary.
That's something that you worry about, not just short term, but long term. So it all depends on health stuff. It all depends on how the Pelicans value the 3 or 4 pick in this draft. And depends too, like the leverage. And so it's going to be interesting. Putting Jalen and Jason both in a package, like, are they the two best young players in any of the conversations? They might be. So, like, yeah, among the Lakers, Knicks, any other team that's going to offer for Anthony Davis, they may be both of the two best. And Marcus Smart has a very valuable contract. So it's like those are three of the better players probably in the talks.
Right.
So I don't know. It seems like a lot to me, but I never have a good gauge on star trade. Like,
no, it's hard.
I've always been so bad at judging. And you talk to a lot of people and you try to find out what it might be. And I've never been good at gauging it.
I mean, as much as I hate to say it, Smart salary, this is why he has the salary that he does, because it helps them aggregate very easily. You can do Smart, let's say Smart, Tatum, and Robert Williams, just for those three. You end up a few million short. Now, if they do take the 14th pick, the way it has to work out, it's not like any other trade. You can't execute the trade like you were saying, Jay, until July 1st. So you would have to come to an agreement, which means you would have to make the pick, and then you would have to sign the guy and then trade him. So that means that if they make the 14th pick for the Pelicans, sign him and trade him, his salary gets thrown into the aggregation, and his max salary at the 14th slot is $3.4 million. So you can do Smart, Tatum, Robert Williams, give them their backup point guard, give them their scoring wing, give them that shot-blocking, rim-rolling center of the future, and then the 14th pick, whomever that may be, and that works out to be $23.5 million, which is just enough to get within the threshold to trade for Anthony Davis. That works financially. If you need to throw in Yabusele, that also works financially, but I don't know if that's anybody that they'd want.
Yeah, boo!
But the fact is that they would have to give up Marcus Smart. And that, I think that hurts the Celtics. They could try to do it with, if they don't give up Smart, then they have to give up Tatum and Brown. Like that, it's either or. And I don't
Terry
know.
Terry Rozier sign a trade?
I don't know that you can do that. I off the top of my head, I think there's a base year compensation thing that it really messes with the cap, and I don't think that necessarily works. But I'm that's off the top of my head. I'd have to confirm that. But I don't know that he'd want to do that either, because going to New Orleans, because
he loves Boston so much and what he had last year.
Yes, that's true. He owes them a favor. So of these scenarios, before we take a break, do you think the Celtics pick the Celtics scenario or the Lakers scenario? Which way do you still see the Celtics as front runners? Because I don't think they're exactly front runners. I think they're even with these other teams now.
I think it's going to be an interesting summer. I think they're certainly still in the running, and
they're in the running for sure.
They are in the running, and this is the most fascinated I've been by a summer in a long time. And we talked about it on the podcast the other night. I just think the number of outcomes for the Celtics this summer, like there's just a wide range of things that could happen. And it starts with Kyrie. It includes Anthony Davis. If those things go one way, how does the front office react? I'm very, very interested by this summer. Locked and loaded, ready to go. And I still have no good points, but but I'll be here watching though.
Yeah, I mean that's what we do. That's our job. We're paid to be here and watch. All right, and we'll talk about it some more. We're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back with more on this draft lottery and what it means for the future in the NBA. Stick around. More Locked On Celtics right after the break. In a draft lottery that was supposed to go to New York, Cleveland, or Phoenix, all of which had 14% chances at the number one pick, the number one pick obviously went to New Orleans, who had a 6% chance. The number two pick went to Memphis, who had a 6.3% chance at that. The number three pick went to the Knicks. They had the 12.7%. That's the only one that kind of stuck there. The Lakers, who had a 9.4% chance at any of the top four picks, did indeed go to number four, and that sunk the Cavaliers and the Suns to the worst possible positions, 5 and 6. So this has started a conversation about, well, the new lottery odds are working. The smoothing of the odds have shown that you don't have
to. You're going
to
miss the process, man. Things like the process.
Yeah, man. It's all starting to work. Jay, is it all starting to work?
It worked this time. But, I mean, it was long shots. Like the Pelicans, they have like a 6% chance to win.
Yep.
Obviously, the teams at the bottom now have a much better chance of actually jumping up. And the teams at the top, their chances have been cut. And I like the new way. I don't think it's perfect. I don't think there is a perfect system.
No.
One thing that bugs me is the current system. It rewards incompetence. Like the Pelicans spent 8 straight years, whatever it's been, squandering Anthony Davis. And they have done nothing to prove to a once in a – he's not a once in a generation type talent, but – All-NBA type talent that he should stay there, and then they just get the number one pick and get another chance. So that part of it bugs me. I wish there was a better solution, but I also think the hope to sell is an incredible thing, and that's why people are still so interested in the Knicks and the Bulls and everybody else when the season goes so wrong and there's still hope at the end that a franchise can get a top pick or that the lottery pick becomes a star or whatever the case may be, that the hope to sell and the lottery's role in that is a really big deal for the NBA, I think. And so it bugs me that incompetent teams get rewarded, and it bugs me.
I don't see it as a reward for incompetent teams. I see it as the function of the draft lottery, the function of giving these lower teams top picks is to encourage this parity that everybody's looking for.
AKA to reward the incompetent teams.
But not every team that loses is incompetent. I mean, you have to go.
That's fair.
Through the cycles of, like, when the Celtics were bad, they weren't incompetent. They just saw the need. Like, okay, we made our run with Pierce. We made our run with Garnett. We're gonna trade these guys away. We're gonna get our assets. We're gonna be bad. That's because that's how it happens. There's a life cycle to good teams. Whenever this run ends, the Celtics are going to be bad again. Every team is bad again, and that's by design.
Celtics are bad, John.
No, they're not bad. They're just not as good as we thought they are. I mean, you know what I mean? So not every team at the bottom of the draft or at the bottom of the standings.
Okay, yeah, I guess it was just the Pelicans in particular.
Sure.
They have been rewarded for incompetence like the Cavaliers were before.
But incompetence. What was their incompetence? They made bad trades. They tried a way to build around this generational talent in Anthony Davis. It didn't work. It turns out
acquiring bad players around him, not a good idea.
Sure. So you can say, okay, yeah, that's incompetence. All right, so now they're bad. Their reward isn't, okay, now you got Zion. But you also, the price you pay is you're losing Anthony Davis. Like, there's a reward, yeah, but you're also paying the price. You're paying the price by losing ticket sales. You're losing season ticket sales. You're losing a talent in Anthony Davis that you should have been able to build around. So these teams generally, unless you're Sam Hinkie, don't want to be at the bottom of the draft. And even that was a weird once-in-a-lifetime type of thing that everybody overreacted to. So I don't buy this rewarding incompetence thing because it's such a small percentage of what the draft lottery does. It's supposed to make these teams that are bad, it's supposed to give them a chance to be good again. And it's supposed to give every good team the hope that once your cycle runs out, then eventually you're going to get good again because that's how the system is built. So I don't think of it that way. I do think that there's some level of discouraging tanking, just at least a little bit. I don't think it's fixed anything either. And I don't think like the next team that's going to sit there and say, well, our chances of getting the number one pick are 9%, and we could make them 14% if we do this. I still think they're going to do that. But I think what it does discourage is some of the thought that we have to be as bad as possible. Like you can still be bad and get down to that 6% chance and say, we still have a pretty good shot just the way the odds are laid out. So it's, all the league wants is,
I think,
for it to
I think
not
too
be
with how many teams, jumped this year, like the floor for teams to fall is lower now. So like the Bulls fell all the way to seventh, right?
Right.
And like you can really drop in this new system with four lottery spots and with the odds more even, so that the jump of a team from below is higher. The odds of that are higher. So that to me is as big a difference as anything. Instead of being promised, you know, the fourth or fifth pick, you can drop another spot and you're more likely to drop now. So that's as big a difference to me as anything too.
Yeah. And so if you're more likely to drop, then there's no real incentive, I guess, to be as bad as some teams were. Like, if you're trying, if you're actively trying to be bad, and again, this is what the league doesn't want. Some teams are bad. That's going to happen. No team is, no league, no year in the NBA is going to have every team fighting for the eighth seed. Like, some teams are just going to be bad. What the league wants is that to be part of the natural progression versus part of a plan. They just don't want the blatant, abject, we're going to tank, we've got better players, but we're not going to play our good players because we need to be as bad as possible. That is what the league is trying to eliminate. So this is a step. We'll see. It's going to take a while because this could be the aberration. The next 5 years, it could all stick to the odds. And so we don't know yet. I think what it does hold off on is that wheel, which I don't entirely understand, but from what I do understand, I'm not a big fan of it because...
Oh, shot at Zarin's dome.
Yeah, no, it's not that. Look, he's much smarter than I am. So I'm not going to take a shot at him. I don't like it.
I think you just did.
No, it's not a shot at him at all. I just don't like it. Because then what happens is you've got the possibility of the Warriors winning the number one overall pick. Like, the champions, all of a sudden, just happens to be their year in the wheel, and here comes Zion. And now what? Like, I personally would rather have the system that we have than that possibility.
You want to reward incompetence.
Exactly. That's exactly my point, Jay. That the incompetence has to be rewarded at all costs.
Yeah. Got to reward incompetence.
Absolutely. That's why you're on the show.
Facts.
All right. With that, we'll end it. When I get a good shot in, end the podcast. That's it. So all of you regular listeners, go ahead and subscribe. Use the new Himalaya podcast app and subscribe. Again, it curates your podcast to your interests. So subscribe to us. You never know what you're going to find. Also, tell your smart speakers in your car and your home to play podcast Locked On Celtics. All of you regular listeners, give us that 5-star rating. Give us that good review. Reward our incompetence by telling everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packet, and J. King. Locked On.